cliffcentral.com.
All right, let's talk to Katlego, my boy. He's on the line right now from Cape Town. Flax, he's gone. Apparently, he snuck out of the fitness segment on Espresso so he could talk to us. I didn't know they did a fitness segment.
They do a lot of things.
They do? We used to put it on when we were having a bad day at 5FM, right? It's not a bad show. Come on. All right. Anyway, he's put this song together. It's a song he's trying to achieve something which I think is very noble. A deep-rooted need to address racism in a positive light, in a way that would transcend all the divides in this country. And he said, understanding that this is a deeply seated issue that has many generations suffer under its oppressive grip, the song aims to encourage people to reflect on the past and draw inspiration rather than find reasons for us to be separated. And it is called A Race, in brackets, Against Time. It's available on My Tracks as well as other digital platforms from this Saturday. That was last Saturday, 10 Rand each. By Nelson Mandela Day on the 18th of July, Katlego hopes to have no less than 67,000 in pre-sales, with the full proceeds from resultant sales donated to the Anti-Racism Network South Africa. That's ARNSA. It's a good cause, right?
And also, people just fight the urge to hate something, because that's what people do. It's quite a catchy tune on top of that.
Yeah, they do. Absolutely.
It's better than the song we started the show with, at very least.
What, Friday, Friday, Friday by Rebecca Black?
Yeah.
All right. I'm very excited to talk about something. This is one of those topics that interests me, because I'm fascinated by our evolution. I'm fascinated by the fact that we are such monstrous creatures with respect to other creatures, and how we treat them, how we torment them, how we seem to encroach on their habitats. We think we're superior in every way, but all we do is treat every other animal on the planet like filth. And this morning, to help us understand a little bit more about our very closest relatives in the structures of our family tree, is Rachel Hogan, director of Ape Action Africa, a primate rescue rehabilitation orphanage in Cameroon. So have you just come from Cameroon now, or what's the story? The Cameroons are far way away, right?
Yeah, I arrived yesterday evening.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you.
Yeah, good to have you here, Rachel. Tell me, it must be fascinating to work with all these primates. I mean, you've got a range of them in this sanctuary of yours, right? You've got gorillas.
We've got gorillas, we've got chimpanzees, we've got baboons, mandrills, different species of forest going on as well. So we're around about 330 primates in our care.
Now, we can get into chimpanzees in a moment or two, because I spoke to a guy, there's a place called Chimp Eden here in South Africa. I'm sure you have some dealings with them occasionally. And he told me that he is more afraid of the chimps than all the others put together, because when they get all excitable, and particularly the very aggressive males, they can do a huge amount of damage, and they get fairly violent. Mm-hmm. But we'll leave that for later, because a lot of the other apes are not. Mm-hmm. And if we look at gorillas, for example, though they are big and strong, they're quite docile creatures. Mm-hmm. And they're not really used to, in the natural order, having very many enemies, right? Mm-hmm. So they kind of lumber around, and they're slow, and there are displays of power by the male gorillas, but otherwise they just kind of get on with their lives. And obviously, when humans enter the equation, then things get complicated. What are gorillas like?
Gorillas are the gentle giants of the forest. They are very quiet. They're very shy. They're also very protective of their family, especially the males. Because in a gorilla group, you would have the silverback, and then he would have his group of females and lower-ranking males. So they are very different than chimpanzees. You know, their movements are very slow, and they tend to just sit and watch. Uh-huh. But they are still very territorial. They're very good fathers. The fathers are very protective.
Oh, really?
They're the gentle giants of the forest. I mean, their whole behaviour and mannerisms are very different to chimpanzees. Chimpanzees will let you know straight away what they're feeling and what they're thinking. They're very open with their emotions, whereas gorillas is a lot more, you know, still waters run deep with gorillas. There's a lot more in their subtle movements, and also their vocalizations are very different. Normally with the chimps, straight away, if they're not happy, they're going to tell you they're not happy. If they're,
by the time the gorilla lets you know, it's too late.
Yeah. But no, they are very different in their behaviors. Yeah. But so the gentle giants.
They've got these family units then. Mm-hmm. And it's that you said the silverback, the females, and then the lower ranked males, and obviously the babies. Mm-hmm. Are they smart? I mean, gorillas, you get the idea that they're almost a little bit, you know, they're a bit slow.
No, they're very intelligent animals. I mean, the primates that we look after, we rescue the infants. So many of them come in as orphans. All of them are orphans, and they're small, young infants that have lost their family groups. And then we rehabilitate them, and then we join them into, we'll choose a family group for them to join into. It's a very long, slow process. And then they form relationships within those groups, which can be quite hard sometimes because you have to pick the right group for the right individual. So you get to know their personalities and who will go well with who and who won't get on well with somebody. So it's a very, very long process.
What made a white girl from England want to go and work in Cameroon?
From when I was a little girl, my parents remember I was probably about 3 or 4 years old. I've always loved animals, but I had this fascination with chimps and gorillas, in particular gorillas. And it just went from there, really. I went out originally. I've been there 15 years now. This is my 15-year anniversary this month.
Do you spend more time with the primates than with humans?
probably half-half.
Okay. Who's better company? Be honest.
I like the primate company. Nice conversations. So I went out there originally just to do a 3-month volunteer placement.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell in love with the place and also wanted to do what I could do to help what was going on with the great apes. And 15 years later, I'm still there. I don't actually have... Because for us, it's not about us having human contact. We have to, when the orphans first arrive, you have to have the human contact because obviously they're very emotionally traumatized. So we have to get to them to a stage where they're comfortable and health-wise and emotionally, they're strong enough to then join a group. And then our groups are in large forest areas that are enclosed. And then we join them with a group. And then once they're with their family group, that's where they form their true bonds, really. So the human contact, it's not, you know, as soon as we can. The most important thing for us is to get them with their own kind and with their families and to start forming relationships.
But when they're very tiny, you obviously have to look after them day and night.
Yes.
So that means feeding them and making sure that that they have everything they need, that they're not injured, that they don't feel like they're emotionally being left out in the cold.
Oh, completely. It's 24-hour.
So where does a baby gorilla sleep when you find it?
Well, we have an infant care area. Uh-huh. So
it's like the pediatric ward.
It is, yeah. and it is 24/7, so there'll be a team of us that will work. We'll have the guys that will work in the day and then the guys that will do the night shift. And depending on their age, they can be waking in the night to be fed. We're in a room and they'll have leaves and, you know, we'll try and teach them how to make a nest and, you know, it really is intense care. And then as soon as they're stronger, then we'll start slowly introducing them to individuals. Gorillas emotionally are really, really fragile. They're these huge, gentle giants.
Yeah.
But they're so fragile. I mean, we have over 100 chimpanzees, but we're around 22 gorillas. So, to look after an infant gorilla is really, really difficult. Normally, when they first arrive, we'll just have one caregiver. And then when they start to get comfortable, then we'll introduce a second caregiver. So the rate is a lot slower with an orphan gorilla.
In all these years of working with gorillas, do you feel that you have a good sense of what their emotional state is?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes
because only experience can really teach you that, right?
Yeah, but sometimes it's very apparent when they come in. They can come in with bad wounds, so you have the physical aspect as well that needs to be treated. But then they can be, you know, they show very similar reactions and emotions to us. So they'll sit and they won't, you know, you can't touch them, you can't go near them. And it's about building that confidence, and everything is at their pace. So you have to be able to judge, and you go on their reaction to everything. So you take it very, very slowly. Several years ago, one of the gorillas that came in, he was around about a year old, and he was really traumatized, and he had terrible wounds, and we couldn't touch him, so we had him in a large pen, and that we kept that outside the veranda of my house in the forest. And, you know, 24/7 I would just sit outside the cage. I wouldn't attempt to touch him because I knew it wasn't the right time to do that. I wouldn't speak to him, but every time he went to sleep, I would be the last person he would see, and every time he woke up, I would be the first person. And after about 2 weeks, I noticed that he would like be following me with his eyes wherever I moved, and that was when I was able to judge, right, I can now attempt to do this and now attempt to do this. And it probably took a good 2 months, 2.5 months before I gained his trust. And that helped him, because emotionally he started to feel secure, which helped him physically. And it was a really, really long process.
It's part psychology, isn't it?
It's, yeah, all of it. And like I say, it's all about, it's all, we react to whatever their reaction is. So, you know, we have to go really, really slowly. And even when we're introducing them to a new family group, especially when they're infants, so they'll, after they've had their care originally with their caregiver, and then we want to introduce them to a group, so the caregivers will still be there, and you know, the guys will take the infant group out into the forest every day, and he's like the adult of the group, so he'll be like the alpha male. Uh-huh. And he'll be there with the little ones in the forest, and they learn
what do
how
they
to
follow
climb.
Him around like kids.
They do, yeah. He'll like sit there on his chair, and he's in the forest, and they'll start to climb and start to explore the forest and know what leaves to eat and start building nests. And then as they grow older and they get to the point where we can then introduce them to an adult group, and we like to try and introduce maybe to a female so they can have a surrogate mommy as well. And then they're in a proper group with, you know, the right dynamics, adults, juveniles, other infants.
How many gorillas are in this enclosed sort of part of the forest that you guys live in?
Well, we've got them in three separate groups. Mm. So we've got a group of seven, and that's the oldest gorillas we've got, and they're coming up to about 15, 16 years old now. So they're in one area, and then we have another group of 11. And in that group was the first ever gorilla that I hand-reared, and he came in as, he was 2 weeks old.
Wow.
He was teeny, teeny tiny, and he's a big, gorgeous 15-year-old silverback now with his own family. And
wow.
He's got his girls, and he's got the little infants. He's done,
he's got his own little...
Yeah, he's got his own little group. So he's in one group. And then we've got a small infant group that's got two young females and two males. And just before I left, we were introducing a new male that had arrived. So it's a very slow process. We introduce one, and then let them build a bond, and then we introduce the other. And also, it's all through personalities that will select who gets introduced first.
And this all means you have to live in the forest too, right?
I do, yes.
So is it difficult to get supplies and things, or are you close enough to a town or a village? Or?
Well, we're based in a village. We're about 1,000-hectare forest area. So our main area, we've got a village, but we're not too far from the capital. We're about an hour's drive, and we've got the truck. So, you know, nearly every day we're buying animal food. Yeah. So the trucks are going out buying animal food.
What do you feed gorillas?
We have all different fruits. It's all very seasonal, vegetables. We'll also go into the bush and cut afromomum, which is a leaf, which they love. And they'll eat that and also use it as bedding. Huh. So when I looked after my first gorilla many, many years ago, I think I'd just about eaten every leaf in that forest, trying to find out which were the ones that they would prefer.
We have any wild poisonous?
I haven't had any
yet.
Thank
goodness.
No. But no, so they have a variety of fruits and vegetables and leaves.
So you're a bit of an expert then in leaves as well?
Yes, I can tell you what tastes nice and what doesn't. Wild ginger's very nice. Gorillas love wild ginger.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, we'll do beans, so they get protein.
Okay.
So even though they're in forest areas, we still feed them, because obviously in the wild they would move and forage for food, and they're not able to do that. So they're fed three times a day. So the trucks are going out every single day. to buy animal food. And then we also buy from the local communities. They'll have little community project farms to grow fruit and veg that we buy off them as well. So it's a constant stream of buying, feeding. Yeah.
And who funds all of this?
Well, we're a British charity, so we're constantly fundraising all the time. We have, we have people that support, that will do events. I try and get out to do talks. I run several marathons to try and get money. We all do our bit, really. So it's constant, you know.
Now, let's talk about chimpanzees, and then I want to get into behavior. Chimps are very interesting creatures. I mean, they're obviously our closest relatives, them and the bonobos. And they have an interesting social structure, and they have there's a kind of strange preoccupation with violence and with food and with all of that stuff that we could also relate to human behavior in some ways. What is it about chimps that makes them, because they're also incredibly strong, and they feel, I mean, you said just now they kind of express themselves a lot more easily than gorillas, but they can communicate in very evolved ways.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about chimpanzees.
As you said earlier, they're very close to us and their emotions are very similar. You know, when they grieve, when they lose members of their group, they're mm-hmm. very territorial, they're very protective of their family members.
How do they grieve?
We've had individuals that unfortunately we've lost. Mm-hmm. And so we always allow the rest of the group to be able to say goodbye. So on the few times that we've lost a family member, the others will enter the satellite cage because they're all in night houses at night. We bring them in for the security because we have, especially in the rainy season, we can have trees fall on fences. So they all come in at night. So they would go and they would touch the individual that's died and touch their face and hold their hand and sit around. And we wait for them to know, to have been able to have said goodbye. And then when they're all ready, they'll leave the cage and we'll take the individual out then. But we always, it's the same if there's an individual that's sick. And that we have to bring them into the satellite cage for them to have medication. Generally, a lot of the group members, especially the alpha males and alpha females, will always, even though they'll go out into the forest area, they'll spend the day in front of the cage because there's somebody missing from the family.
Oh, wow.
They laugh.
They do?
They've got very cheeky laughs. So it's very funny when you walk past the chimp group because all you can hear is chuckles and giggles. They laugh. They're interested in everything. They're busy, busy, busy chimps. They're always doing something.
That laughter is an interesting one because I heard from someone a long time ago, and now it's clearly nonsense, that humans are the only animals that really laugh. I mean, you know, hyena makes a noise as if it's laughing, but it's clearly not. But chimpanzees laugh.
They laugh, and gorillas laugh.
And you can tell the difference between that and a call or a cry of any other kind?
Yes, they laugh. It's one of the best sounds ever. They tickle each other. So when they're playing and they're tickling and they're just, especially gorillas, they've got a really deep, gruff chuggle. but chimpanzees, you know, they have their play face when they're playing. They're very cheeky. But yeah, they laugh. Yeah.
And these alpha males, are you ever worried about them because they're so strong and they get so angry so quickly?
That's where it's always a challenge because we've got different family groups. It's not all 100 and something chimps together. Mm. So they're all in different family groups. And when they first arrived to us, the majority of them were young orphans. So obviously we didn't have any issues. But now, 15, 20 years on,
There's a hierarchy.
So we always have to be aware and we're always observing the groups because positions will change and you'll have an alpha male. And then you can see that as the younger males are coming up and getting older,
they challenge him.
They start to challenge. And we've done it many times where we've had to move individuals from one group because maybe the alpha male, they've removed him from his position. Or we can see there are some issues going on. Or even with the females, you know, some of the females can be one of the ones that will be creating problems. So we're very aware of personalities and what's going on in the group and what's changing. We have long periods of observation as well. So at the moment, we're actually in the process of moving some to go and join another family because there are issues in that family group, and we know that maybe now at this stage they'll be better off in another group. So it's always constant that you're having to check, because, you know, this month it's this guy that's the alpha male, but then all of a sudden there's this, we've got to keep a close eye on this other male because he's suddenly wanting to show that he's a few years older now. So, yeah, observation periods are really important as well.
Well, let's talk about primate behavior, because this is a fascinating thing for humans. We see so much reflected of what we do, the way we behave. But there are obviously small differences. Now, who are the most badly behaved? Chimpanzees, mandrills, baboons, monkeys, gorillas?
Well, they're all very different, and it all depends on what's going on within the group. You know, we've got some groups at the moment where there aren't any issues, but then, and also with regards to feeding as well, you know, we have to make sure that when we do feeding, that we scatter feed, and it's very important that alphas will get their food first, because it's little things like that that can cause disruption in the group. So, or if we're giving medication, you know, the others are thinking, oh, what's he getting that we're not getting? So,
oh, wow. Okay.
So we have to kind of oversee that and control that. But they're so complex, and there are so many things that can be going on within the group. And sometimes it's very subtle that we don't notice. But we've got, you know, we're over 40 staff members, and we have volunteers out there as well, so we're all kind of checking, and you know, what's going on, who's suddenly, you know, maybe challenging the alpha male, or which female is causing some problems, or which ones are the younger males, and there's always things going on between the group.
You mentioned how intelligent gorillas are. I'd imagine chimps must be a little more smart than that, and then there are others. I suppose the baboons are a bit stupider. I mean, come on. I know you love them all.
I love them all.
You've got to teach us about these things.
No, baboons are very complex, actually. They're interesting to watch. We're actually doing an introduction with baboons at the moment. So even the same thing applies. We need to know who's the boss in that group, who's the alpha female, which one will be good to introduce first, because what we want is for them to, when a new member goes into the group, that they're protected. So it's all very, you always have to know who and where they are in the order, really. So it's all very different. Chimps can be quite complex when it comes to introduction. We really, you know, we'll look at the individual and the personalities, and a lot of the youngsters now, what we're trying to do is get them with surrogate mothers. So as soon as they've had their session of care with us, we'll look for a really strong maternal female, and then we'll introduce them to the female first, and then this male and this male, and it can take months and months and months before we've got an individual introduced in the group. So it's a very slow process, and they have good days and they have bad days, but when we're doing an introduction, we always end on a positive note. So that's why it's a slow process, because we'll allow them in for an hour together.
It sounds like people. This is like if you bring someone new into a company, or
it is. It's completely the same, and it's all, you know, like at the moment I'm introducing a young male gorilla into a group of three, and so I've introduced him into with the other male first, the youngest of the group, and he started off with just like 20 minutes a day. And it would go well, and they would play, but we would always finish there, so they would always finish on a positive note. And then we leave that for a couple of weeks, and then we extend it, and then, you know.
Are there any ways that you can immediately identify that these are very intelligent creatures? I mean, do they build things? Do they make things? Are they able to communicate very specific things to each other that you didn't think in the beginning when you just started they were able to do?
They surprise me every day.
Tell me about some of those. I mean, I'm fascinated in how the behavior betrays something that's, you know, a lot more than basic intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I first arrived in Cameroon, a lot of my work was observing and working with the infants. And I mean, with regards to gorillas, I really learned about gorillas from having Khan Daniel, who was the first gorilla I hand-reared at 2 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I learned how to pick up the different vocalizations. And with chimps, it was very similar. You know, when they're in the forest and they see something interesting and then everybody's there and they're trying to work it out what it is, or if they see a snake, there's the hoot, the warning call, and they all call to each other. You mentioned before about tool use as well. You know, they'll break branches off and start sticking them everywhere, trying to get things. Our fences are electrified, but the chimps are very clever. Every day, it's before anyone goes out of the night houses, all the staff have to, we have to walk the perimeter. We have to check there's no loose branches, because some of them have learned to touch the fence with a stick, and they'll be able to hear if, you know, there's a mass or the current's a little bit low. So there's, we have to constantly be, you know, two steps ahead of them regarding the fence.
You get the feeling that all they want to do is get out.
We've got a few individuals that you can see are looking and, you know, will break a branch, or so even, you know, with branches that are overhanging on the inside or the out, we have to always be aware of that. So that, you know, we've got a few individuals that will know how to test the fence, so we're always on top of the fences.
All right, so we got chimps, we've got baboons, we've got gorillas. What else do we have?
We've got mandrills.
Now, the mandrill's that one with the blue...
The beautiful red face.
Yes, beautiful red face, yes. And a big blue ass.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, very colourful.
Strange-looking creature. Where are they actually from?
They're in an area of Cameroon, yes.
Oh, so that's their natural habitat,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so we have two groups of mandrills at the moment.
And what distinguishes them behaviour-wise from the others?
Again, they're very different than chimpanzees as well.
How so?
Well, they communicate in different ways. The males, we've got quite a few males there that are very dominant and are challenging each other at the moment.
They're obviously closer to baboons, though, right?
Yeah, very similar to baboons. But again, all of their way of communicating, and chimps and gorillas' way, it's all very different. So you have to learn. I mean, with mandrills, I didn't really know anything about mandrills when I first arrived. And then I had, he was like a couple of day old mandrill that arrived, teeny tiny. And it was only through having to look after him for several months, because he was still so young to go into a group, that you had to kind of learn what that facial expression means. And that was like, no, he doesn't want you to do that. And that means, yeah, he's hungry. And that. So it's, I kind of learned from him, really. But they're very much in their facial expressions as well.
And obviously you can't mix these different species up. They don't get along together. Chimps obviously will not deal well with baboons and vice versa, right?
Well, I mean, we keep all of our species
separate.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm sure there are cases in the wild where...
And usually it doesn't end well for one of the two.
I'm not sure what happens in the wild. I mean, if you think about all the forest guenons that are living in the canopy, and then there are chimps. I mean, chimps are hunters as well, so...
Right.
Chimps hunt.
And chimps are also, you know, they've been known to eat each other when necessary.
Well, they'll hunt small monkeys in the forest, whereas gorillas...
Gorillas don't do that.
No, they're vegetarian. They like the fruit and veg.
Totally veg, like you, Ben.
Yeah, like me as
gorillas,
well.
Gorillas and Ben.
I'm not totally veg and haven't been for so long.
Mubs, the chimpanzees are more like you and me. We eat meat and veg.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to start cutting down on the meat.
Do you think so?
I think I should.
Yeah, Gareth, do it for the planet, you self-centered narcissist.
Are you interested in this stuff, or do you get to eat some meat in Cameroon occasionally?
No, I've been a vegetarian since I was a little girl.
You see, most people who are in animal rights are, though. I think that they feel, you know, either I'm doing this properly or I'm not going to do it at all.
Right. Yeah, no, it's called enlightenment, Gareth.
All right. Yes, I totally agree. I think it is enlightened.
You should try just... You know,
I should try.
A week.
No, Gareth outsourced this masculinity into his diet.
So thanks very much, Ben. Thank you. That's very nice of you. Now, I hear that these monkeys also, their sexual behavior is kind of disturbing sometimes. I mean, disturbing for an outside observer for the first time. To you, it must be completely normal.
Disturbing in what way?
Well, I mean, they're very very sexually aggressive. They do what they want. They say what they want in terms of making noises and carrying on. And I'm sure that it must be interesting to watch. Tell me about it.
Well, they can be, because they, you know, for an alpha male, normally he has access to the females, and that's where a lot of fights can start.
Access means whenever he wants some, he gets some.
Yeah. Right. Well, mainly when, you know, when a female is on a swelling and she's cycling.
Otherwise, he's not interested?
Most of the time, it's when they're in cycle.
Really? So yeah. It's kind of not for pleasure.
Yeah.
It's for breeding.
Yeah. So when there can be, you know, issues, that's when we can get issues. And that's where we keep a regular check on female cycles. Because if there's fights within the group, it can be over a female.
Wow. All right. And I believe that mandrills masturbate the whole time.
Not all the time, no.
We've got to know these things. I mean, it's not unlike humans.
Are you allowed to keep, like, monkeys as pets in South Africa?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Because I've been in shopping centers where I've seen, I think they're called marmosets.
Yeah, the marmosets.
Small monkeys. Mm.
Yeah, you that's probably not a good idea, though.
No.
I mean, the monkeys they have capuchin monkeys and those kinds of things around. But obviously, it's tough on these little creatures because they don't know where they are.
No, they should never be kept as pets.
Walking around a shopping mall, I mean, that's ridiculous, right? No. Are you ever concerned? Have you ever been in a situation where you're concerned for your own safety with these great apes?
No, I mean, we've got very strict protocols where we are. But I mean, obviously, we've had escapes happen, and that's normally the rainy season is a very hard time for us, and we're in the rainy season at the moment because we can't stop trees falling on fences.
So, what are you doing here in South Africa?
I've come to visit some friends, and then run a half marathon and buy some electrical equipment for my fences and be very cold because it's freezing.
And who's this out here with you?
He's my pal, Ryan, and he's been over to Cameroon several times. He's volunteered and helped out.
So he also works with the apes?
He's based here, but he comes over to volunteer.
Ryan, come up to this microphone. Let me talk to you. I want to see whether he enjoys the apes as much as you do. Ryan, the simple question, humans or primates? We are primates as well, but humans are the other primates. Who's more fun?
Primates by far.
Really?
Yeah, by far. I'll take a primate over a human any day.
And which ones do you like working with?
They're actually all so different. My favorite one was a mangabee.
What is that?
It's I don't know, Rachel.
It's a type of monkey.
But also that came in as a baby and was just had such a personality, laughed and played tricks on me and stuff like that. So
mangabee. How do you spell that?
Mangebey.
Gebey, mangabee. I can't believe I've never heard of one of these. Oh, wow, they're cute little things.
Mm-hmm.
A sooty mangabee.
Yeah, we have two groups of those.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And do these things, are these things smart as well? They're strange-looking little monkeys.
They are very clever. We've got those as well, the red cat mangabees. They have the beautiful red head.
Yeah. Gorgeous. Do you have vervet monkeys there?
We do, yes.
Yeah? Those are naughty.
We don't have we haven't got a huge amount of them, but we've got vervet, yeah.
Now, what is the most fascinating part of all of this for you is watching these interactions and seeing how similar they are. You've got to admit when you work with them that they do kind of remind you of the way a lot of humans behave, right?
They do. I mean, my drive is they shouldn't actually be where they are. There shouldn't be a need for a project like mine, because where they should be is back out in the wild. In the forest areas with family groups. So, you know, for me, it's a real privilege to be able to see them and work with them every day. However, if I could take all that away and have them back where they would belong, I would be back in Birmingham.
the male that you raised, who's now got his own family, he's a silverback, he's 15 years old or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Does he still recognize you and does he still interact with you? I mean, do you feel that there's any kind of connection there with him?
There is. They all know who I am because I've played some part. But, you know, for me, it's not about us having human contact. He's got his own family group. He's in the forest. But, you know, when I'm on site, I'll always go and check everywhere. And, you know, if I call them, they'll come out of the forest. And whenever I'm walking the fence line doing my checks, generally I'll have a line of 11 walking around with me, checking the fence with me.
They'll go with you? All the gorillas?
Yeah, they follow me in a line. Same with the chimps as well. So I'll be on one side and they'll be on the other and we'll walk and they've got like a little conga line.
He doesn't communicate with you though?
No, we'll sit. On the times that I'll just sit and I'll observe, and normally he'll sit quite close to me, but on obviously on the inside of the fence, and then the rest of the group will...
So you don't go into their enclosure and interfere?
No, no, not at all. The only time that we will have any intervention is if there's a medical reason. If we're doing health checks or if one of them's poorly, we'll bring them into the night cage. But as for going into, once they're with their family groups, that's where we leave them then. So it's only when they're very, very little that we have that human contact.
So for them, how do you think they observe us? Do you think they think that we're a part of the group, but we're just... a satellite, or how do they view us as being some extraneous animal that they interacted with for a brief time?
Well, they're all their caregivers. Most of our staff have been there for about the same amount of time that I have, so they've grown up. So they kind of see them as a family member. You know, they will react differently when strangers go to the enclosure. So, you know, when it's us or the staff, they know who we are and, you know, there's no reaction. When sometimes a stranger will come up, then there's a very different reaction because it's like, you know, what are you doing here? So they recognise who's caregiver and who's not caregiver. And our guys have got, have raised some of these from when they were little and they're now adults now with their own family. So they have, the, you know, that nice relationship that if they are poorly and we need to bring them in the night houses, we're able to give them medication and they have their regular health checks. So
how endangered are gorillas?
They're very endangered, yes, as well as chimpanzees. Yeah, I mean, they're not sure on the wild population count. There are different statistics and there are different evaluations of how many years before, you know, some say 15-20 years before, you know, they'll disappear from certain forest areas. But with regards to Cameroon, there's no, as far as I know, not been a wild census of how many actually wild populations are out there.
So it could be a lot more, it could be a lot less.
Yeah, we're not sure. I mean, all I can go on, because we're not working with regards right into the forest, we deal with the orphans that come in.
And how do you get these orphans? Do people bring them to you because they know you exist?
Some do. Some people have kept them as pets, have rescued the orphan because they're, you know, they want to help the orphan and the, you know, they'll get bigger.
Yeah. And no one wants them anymore.
Yeah, no one wants them and they know they're illegal, so they'll donate, or we work in collaboration with the government. So if they know that somebody's been keeping them as a pet, they'll be confiscated. But you get, you know, you can have chimps that have been kept as pets for, you know, 20, 30 years. Some of the chimps are my age now. And we'll go in and rescue them and give them a new family and a new life.
And how long, what's the long lifespan of a gorilla or a chimpanzee?
Well, in captivity, it can be like 40 years plus, because obviously they haven't got the
natural predation or any of that stuff. So they can last a long time.
Yeah, so some of our guys, our oldest chimp now is probably late 30s and our oldest gorilla is 16. So he's still got a little bit of growing to do.
When you think about how gorillas live in the wild, there isn't really anything that eats them except humans. And there's this bushmeat trade, which we all hope is on the decline.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any evidence that anything else threatens gorillas?
Well, obviously, there's any like natural disease that can be out there.
But there are no other animals that look for trouble with gorillas?
No.
And chimpanzees? Aside from other chimpanzees?
Yeah, no. It's mainly, unfortunately, it's humans that are the main cause.
Do you do this because you're moved by the plight of these animals? Do you feel you're making progress? It must be sometimes very disheartening because you think about how many animals you can't help.
Yes.
But then when you see what you've done and you've raised gorillas to 15, I mean, that must feel very, it's satisfying, right? So it depends on which day I talk to you. On a certain day, you might feel like there's a lot going on,
yes,
and you're very happy. And on other days, you feel almost like you can't do enough.
Mm-hmm. No, it's completely like that. And also, when an orphan comes in, it's very much a mixed emotion because, you know, you're happy you've been able to save that individual. But at the same time, you know there are other family members that have been killed and that there's still hunting going on. So it's very mixed emotions all the time. You know, when I get an orphan in, it's like my heart sinks because it's like, oh, another one. But that was one of the lucky ones that made it to us. So I think, I mean, we've been working in Cameroon for 20 years now and we have achieved a huge amount. But what we want to look at first, because as you rightly said, it's about, it's not just protecting the ones in the sanctuary. We need to protect the ones that are in the wild. So we're moving more towards trying to do some work in protecting wild populations and keeping them in the wild so they don't have to come into the sanctuary.
How can people, if they want to get involved and perhaps help you fundraise, how can they do that?
Everything, if they go to our website, everything is
and
there.
And what's your website?
It's www.apeactionafrica.
Ape Action Africa.
Yes, and there's lots of information there. We have a volunteer program. People come out and volunteer for us for several months. There's lots of individuals that just fundraise, you know, do garage sales, run marathons. Every little bit helps. I mean, our animal food is our biggest expenditure, and milk is very expensive.
What does it cost you in a month?
I can only work in CFA.
Right.
So I'll try and, let me try and convert it into about US dollars. So it's about $4,000 a month for just animal food. I think I've got the conversion right.
That's
yeah,
a so, lot.
Yeah.
It's
and
a
milk.
Fortune.
So when we're getting, you know, when we're getting orphans in.
You feed the milk?
They have milk, yeah. Really.
Cow's milk?
The same formula that you'd give human babies.
Wow, okay. Wow, yeah. That's fascinating stuff. Yeah. Well, listen, keep up the good work, and thank you for coming to see us this morning.
Thank
it's
you very much.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Wow, interesting. Ape Action Africa is what it's called. And if you want to find out more, you can go to apeactionafrica.com. Rachel Hogan, thank you so much for coming to see us this morning. What an interesting discussion. So, Ben, what do you think you are? Gorilla? Gibbon? Mandrill?
Well, everyone wants to be a gorilla because they're so big and strong and powerful. I still think I'm more of a gibbon.
Gibbons have long arms, right?
They do, yeah.
Very, very long arms. Mm-hmm. Not very smart, gibbons. I think I like chimpanzee. I'm going to stick with that one.
Yeah, but that's like everyone.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's why we should go with chimpanzee. Thank you very much. Beautiful song. That's Rihanna. And Love on the Brain. Mubs even says she liked that. So I've scored one winner in song choice this week. Huh? One. Just one.
No, come on. That can't be.
So from apes and our knowledge of apes, which we tried to expand this morning, we go to humans and their sexual behavior.
Uh-oh.
Because today is Friday, which means it's time for the sex show. Oh, how are you, Jonty?
Morning, Gareth.
What's happening?
Fascinating interview, a black dominatrix and a black submissive.
And why is this fascinating? Because this is not a big deal in the black community, or what is it?
I think it is a big deal because cultural attitudes have enormous impact on our sexuality.
Uh-huh.
And the kink community is quite racially divided. And you think, but wait a minute, this is about pleasure. This should be bringing us all together. But
the
these
kink
divisions
community.
Are there.
Is that what they're called? Officially?
The kink community. So it's not the black community, the white community. It's the
kink community.
And within that, it's quite divided.
Yeah. So we were talking the other night, and there's even kind of an interesting little political angle to this.
Oh, yeah?
Because imagine a black dominatrix redressing some political wrongs.
Well, I imagine, like, you know, in any conservative society.
Yes.
Whether it's white Afrikaans conservatives, whether it's black traditional conservatives, it would be frowned upon for the woman to take a dominant role in anything, especially sex.
Yeah, and that's why it's fascinating. And both of these women have very strong feminist views as well.
Huh.
So how do you be a feminist and a submissive? Kind of really an interesting dynamic.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
That's today on Sex Talk. Will nobody be getting naked or having expanded orgasms?
No, not today.
Okay,
today is the serious stuff.
But soon.
Yeah. Fair chance next Friday we are going to have some strippers in the studio.
Oh, that's great. I knew you'd bring something. Yeah, there we go. And Dave Levinson's here with the Gas Comedy Podcast. Good morning, Dave.
I don't want to say that I came early.
Mm. With Jonty around.
But I do come just before the sex show.
Yes, because you do. Your show is before the sex show.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. What are you doing
today? I'm new to this radio thing. Give me a break.
No, I know. What are you doing today?
Today we're interviewing a Zimbabwean who's going to be doing a world record attempt at comedy clubs. Proper Guinness, like the real deal.
Wow.
In Zimbabwe.
Oh, really?
Which is relevant because I didn't realize we have our own Zimbabwean show on the station.
We do indeed. But this is interesting because I was going to say to you, well, if he's going to break a world record by doing shows outside of Zim, that's because Zim is in such a disastrous state at the
but
moment.
But that's the thing. I didn't realize there are 7 or 8 clubs in Zimbabwe. So he's going to be doing a record attempt. He's got 5 days or something to do as many as he can. And we're going to find out more. I also want to ask him about what's happening there. Good to get a comedian's perspective.
They'll have a good idea.
And we're doing beer tasting. I don't know what that was.
That was someone laughing at you because you're doing beer tasting.
Yes. It's a breakfast beer. It's got wheat and oats and water. So it's basically jungle oats, really.
Okay.
And the guy that's coming in doesn't drink. So he has to taste the beer. So his taste buds are new and virginal.
Who's
like,
that?
Like Jonty's.
Who's coming in?
Ryan Whittle.
Okay.
Ryan Whittle's the comedian who holds the record. I've got 2 record comedians. He's been beaten up the most after gigs.
Oh, really?
He's the nicest guy, but he just says the wrong stuff. He'll be in the parking lot. There'll be some Dutchman going, "Hey, did you say that thing about my wife?" And Ryan's like, "Sorry, man." So that's 2 record attempts today.
That sounds excellent.
And he's going to drink his first beer.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you very much, Dave Levinson. What else do we have today? Let me have a look. There's so much. It's Friday. Friday is my favorite day here. I'm very biased. We've got Casper's radio show on from 11 with Casper De Vries and his team. The whole gang will bring you the usual Friday fun craziness. Trippe, trippe, truene. That, of course, is the Afrikaans radio version of Game of Thrones. Then there's Stof Poepies, which is lessons from history. Something else that I can't even pronounce. Anusing Muse. Oh, amusing news. Yeah. He spelt it Anusing Muse. Out there in the thought of the week, Jacobus van Heerden and Rory Booth from Shrek the Musical will pop in as their special guests. Then it's The Buzz with Jason von Berg and Jen Su, as well as Nikita Camacho. He's back. He's slicker. He's bigger. And he's better and braver. Ifani is the guest on the show this week. They'll talk about building powerful and memorable brands with Tammy Ma. And then it's Fabulous. She's a foodie. Sorry, she's fabulous. She's a foodie and she's the host of a new cooking show called Top Chef. That's Lorna Maseko. We've had Lorna on here before. She's great. Then O'Neill. And he'll look after you between 2 and 4. Songstress Mpumi has a new song out and stops by to talk about it. Tidal Waves make their OOC debut. And Vanessa MD will show you what she's made of. Zana will talk about what he's been up to. Lots of cool guests on O'Neill and Cliff Central today. And then it's Kelman on Cliff Central with Aria Kelman. What would Fridays be without?
Yes, so Relax It's Flax has officially been declared a drug. You cannot go the week or the weekend without it.
Right.
You need your weekly fix.
Right.
And it's not on sale in South Africa yet, but you can download it off the Cliff Central website.
Very good.
You just search Relax It's Flax, get every single episode, get as buzzed as you want on Relax It's Flax, and have a splendid weekend. 420 today.
Excellent. Relax
That's
It's Flax.
That's why it starts at 420, because Relax It's Flax is addictive like a drug.
There we are. Alessandro Barbosa, the lookalike to Michael Flax, is on straight after that, so you won't even need to get confused. You could just listen to them both. And he's doing the Game Zone. Nonhle Tema will stop by to talk about a great initiative that she's a part of. And Aria will check in with the Stimrel ambassadors. Then, of course, our Zim conversations go live and podcast only this afternoon at 6. As Zimbabwe's buildings burn down and its people rise up, the guys will speak to Arnold Tsunga, who is a director in the International Commission for Jurists in Africa, about the state of the nation and human rights in Africa. And then, also, Duncan Mabaso's Untapped Talent will be on. Oh. What do you get when you put a WBA welterweight Pan-African champion boxer and a female Indian stand-up comedian together?
Sure.
A hot box that's hard-hitting and will get you smiling. The show dedicated to Alton Sterling and Philando Castile in All Lives Matter. That's Untapped Talent, Duncan Mabaso today, along with some conversations that are available as podcast-only shows, but you get to hear them on cliffcentral.com. Thank you for joining us this morning. Have an excellent weekend. And as Ben said, there's plenty of sport to watch. If you're going to be in PE this weekend, I'll be down there. Otherwise, we will see you on Monday morning. The fashion world is up in arms after a woman was photographed wearing a dress made of pubic hair. Bill Clinton, however, was fascinated by it. He said, "I have never come across a dress like that before." Oscar Pistorius is back in jail and he's already in trouble with a fellow inmate. Radovan Krecher is apparently furious that Oscar didn't bring any fresh porno mags back, like he promised. Krecher is still knocking one off to a 1997 Scope magazine, and it's in such disrepair that he can't even rent it out to the other prisoners. Finally, Lionel Messi has decided not to retire from international football after all. This about turn apparently happened after Messi received a text from Pele saying he should keep it up. Messi could never realistically bow out internationally in such a limp way, so he's looking to harden his focus for the next World Cup and working up the enthusiasm one more time for a spectacular climax in Russia. That, and he has to help his dad pay off those fines. We shall see you on Monday. Have a very good weekend. Keep it on cliffcentral.com.